We're good to go. Just try and keep your voices up a little bit. You're covering a little bit of distance.
All right, let's call to order the Affordable Housing Collaborative meeting for this Thursday, August 25th. I will do a quick roll call. I guess go around the room. We'll start with you, Kat.
Callie Babbitt Spears, present.
Christian Blaine, present.
George Helwig, present.
Megan Sparks, present.
Cheryl Murphy, representative to the planning board, present.
And Brian Wagner for the planning department.
First up is the minutes from June 23rd. Did anybody see anything in there that you wanted to make any comments about? Nope, none. All right. Motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve.
All in favor?
Nope, we need a second.
Oh, I need a second, sorry.
Second.
Okay.
All in favor? Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Do we have any correspondence or public comments tonight? Looks like none.
We do not.
Right, so that brings us right to the new business, newish business, a few weeks ago, right? Discussion on how to advance and implement work by the town's housing affordability consultant with the planning board and the town council on the subject of the missing middle housing for South Kingstown. So, we got some work to do on that, right?
Yeah, we do. You all attended the meeting a couple of weeks ago, and you know, I think that the members of the board, I think you're going to need to put your advocate's hats on a little bit. Because some of the decisions that are going to have to be made in terms of changes to planning and zoning are going to be new. They're going to be a little uncomfortable changes because most of them involve allowing for more dense development on properties. In order to spread the high cost of land out over more development units. Our consultants that we have working on this are looking at trying to do this in an aesthetic and appealing way. But the fact is we need to find a way to make it happen in areas of the town where A, that it fits, and B, will actually have an impact. And I say that by way of example to an ordinance we passed a year ago allowing for cottage development, but that ultimately wound up being so limited in the zones where it could be put, we've had zero applications under that program at this point. So not only do you need to try and find a place for it to fit aesthetically, it needs to physically fit. You need to be able to do it in areas of town where the property exists to do it. In fact, the only cottage plan that we have is something that's going to be coming in that looks like a cottage plan but is really a comprehensive permit plan because it is being proposed in a zone where cottage developments were not allowed under the ordinance.
So where's that?
Out in West Kingston.
In a
R80 zone.
So there's no, it's on a septic. There's no sewers out there?
So that's
why it's outside of the cottage zoning?
No, it got restricted to R10.
Was it R10 or was it R10 and R20?
I think it was R10 and R20.
The cottage zoning was R10? R20.
Yeah, R10 and R20, I think. So the proposal complies in all respects with what we would have allowed for cottage zoning, except it's in R80.
Well, I think we did have comments in there that it has to be accessible to infrastructure for water and sewer. I thought that was in the cottage zoning. I could be wrong.
It wasn't in the cottage zoning.
Okay.
Typically,
yeah.
Which is
that was like because I kept trying to find land that way that it had to be on the sewer.
Right.
But there aren't any in West Kingston, so do you think that they'll let them do that?
Well, like I said, it's coming in under a comprehensive permit proposal, so...
And that takes it out of our hands, correct?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent they can engineer it. I mean, certainly septic wastewater disposal would be a public health concern that would be a valid reason for denying even a comprehensive permit. They'll have to show they can get over it from an engineering perspective.
Is it in the... The water, there's a critical watershed.
The GPOD?
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't looked at that overlay with it. Like I said, we just have some very early design sketches on it now.
How many units was it?
It was maybe a dozen.
Uh-huh. And that's on, is that on an acre? Is that what that, did you say R80? That's 2 acres.
It's in an R80, but I don't know that they're conforming lots.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
They may be. They're kind of very long and.
And what income level are the affordable units?
What?
What income level would the affordable units be at?
I believe that they'd be at 80%.
Just
rentals.
I don't have that much information on it yet. Like, it's not even a full application yet.
So usually it's between 80 and 120% of the median income. This will be interesting because allowing it in R80, that basically just opens Pandora's box. Right? I mean,
right.
And that means that pretty much anybody can propose anything anywhere.
Well, and this is...
I'm actually excited for you.
The other thing is that I believe that this is an affordable housing group that's putting this together, so it'll be 100% affordable housing.
Okay. That makes it it'll be an interesting one.
What?
Do you know, can you say who?
I can't because I don't remember.
but that would be, like, I could find that, right? That would be in the public documents?
We don't have public documents yet because, like, we don't have an application yet. We just have some preliminary sketches. So.
Okay.
This is like behind the building talk, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
What is the just out of sheer curiosity, what is the reasoning for making so the cottage the area where you can actually do the cottage building can only be on town water and sewer, and is it in certain areas? Is there like a couple of blotted areas in town where that can happen essentially? What was the reasoning for that? Is it to keep things from sprawling out? Is it pushback because of environmental concerns? What was the main driving factors for limiting it to just town water and town sewer, I guess?
Well, town water and town, I mean, so cottage zoning allows for what, up to 8 units per acre, and then with the affordable, it would go up to possibly 10. So it's a pretty dense, very dense, occupancy.
Yeah.
So there was a concern of, just sewers and water, making sure you have the infrastructure to support that. And then also you wanted it in a somewhat of a neighborhood where it somewhat fits versus, R80, and then all of a sudden you've got 10 houses on 1 acre. So.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is I think part of me looks at those scenarios, and I think you have the same issue in town even. There was the one that was, I saw the application online, it was on Columbia Street.
Right.
And that was one that was being worked on, and I thought, very cool, but like, that would look kind of goofy. I mean, it's because it's all single family homes, and they're all on the same 1 acre. You know what I mean? So the aesthetic part of it, I don't get. Because I'm all for them. I'm not like I don't think it would. But I mean, as far as keeping conformity, I think you have the same issue in town. Because we just don't have high density that much high density stuff. Except for some of the newer constructions.
I think the idea was it would be better suited for infill. So in those areas that are higher density than
Mountain.
Looking at some of the projects that we did approve, in particular the one behind the police station, I think allowing that to come out to the street and sprawl into the street is not a good idea. Especially, I think it's kind of better if it's set back and it becomes its own little kind of community. And that's kind of the idea of cottages, that it's its own little community.
Yeah.
So that's probably, that's just my personal feeling.
So do you think that what has gone on back there is going to impact moving forward?
In what way?
Well, I feel like whenever we talk about that area,
I think there's lessons learned that people was not as so. There's a, I think, so I'm just speaking for myself, not for Brian or from down here, but I think there's an interest for more housing, right? And I think everybody recognizes the need. So there's a kind of a push to try to approve things like that.
Right.
And I think the thought was that even if the ones that were not necessarily deed restricted, creating more houses, small houses that people could afford. I think that there were some lessons learned, and just hearing comments, I think there was members besides myself on the board that kind of felt like, yeah, there's some lessons learned there, things that we shouldn't approve next time.
Yeah. But then that's why I wonder, moving forward, if that kind of negatively impacted it. So moving forward, it might be harder to get things.
So comprehensive permit is kind of difficult, and that's actually one of the things I was hoping we can discuss here. I discussed it with Brian a little bit, but comprehensive permit is kind of difficult to not approve, right?
Okay.
Where typically on a subdivision, there's findings that you have to approve it, and also almost reverse on a comprehensive permit, there's findings that you have to disapprove it.
Okay.
So it makes it more difficult. So I don't think necessarily it's going to stop it.
Okay.
One of the things that I talked to Brian about in a past meeting is we have typical subdivision, we have inclusionary zoning. Mm-hmm. So if there's a subdivision of more than five units, or
more than five.
You have 20% has to be affordable. Comprehensive permit is they have to do 25%. But there's other advantages for the builder. I was hoping that one of the things that we could possibly do in this group was to look at the zoning requirements for inclusionary zoning, compare that to the comprehensive, look for win-wins, and make suggestions for changes to our inclusionary that would maybe make that more desirable for a builder. Something that would maybe give them some trade-offs, but still benefit the town. And give some suggestions to the planning board on possible changes to the zoning ordinance for inclusionary zoning that we may want to consider in the town.
Because we want to entice them to go through us, not through the comprehensive plan. That's the goal.
And you know, any of these regulations, while they're intended good intentions, there's also, you know, of course, typical things that not so good. And I think that there's probably opportunities for trade-offs, which would make it more desirable for the builder as well as more desirable for the community. There was a project that came in front of the planning board two nights ago, and it's only at pre-application, so it's very, very early. It may or may not go forward, which is, they don't even have to give public notice for that. They just come and say, hey, these are things we're thinking about, you got any comments for us. That's how early in the stage it is. But it was for a possible 70 apartments for 70 units.
70 units. Okay.
Oh, I was going to discuss that during staff update, so you're getting a little ahead of me. So.
Right, I'll back off.
And, you know, actually, it sort of fits in. Well, it doesn't really fit in here because now 70 units, you're well above the missing middle, which is what Horsley Witten is currently working on. So this it is a little bit different. But I did provide material, so we can discuss that. But I think that we're, you know, if this missing middle concept is to gain traction and have realistic impact, I think we need some affordable housing advocate voices to be heard at the planning board meetings. I would invite everybody to attend when those things are on the agenda and to speak your minds on, you know, the pluses, the minuses, the benefits, you know, comments that you're hearing at the meeting and whatnot, because, like I said, change is tough. And we all want to live in the towns that we grew up in, but the fact of the matter is that if you want a healthy turnover of community members, you need to have a variety of housing options that are affordable to people. And we need to make sure that our planning is providing that as we move forward.
So, Joe, you're suggesting we take a look at the two and sort of, you know, compare and contrast and see, hey, what could we do to juice up our inclusionary zoning rules to make them more palatable, basically, for the builders?
And look for opportunities that may benefit the builder as well as the town. So, for instance, we require that the affordable units be pretty much compatible to the market rate, right? So that we look at that as not only the size, but like the number of bedrooms. So if the market rate's gonna have two bedrooms and a certain percentage is gonna have one bedroom, so we require the affordable to be the same. But there might be opportunity if a builder wants to do one bedrooms, if he's willing to go higher than the 20% or higher than the 25%, so even more than what the minimum is, maybe that's an advantage. You know, regulations don't necessarily allow that right now. So sure. Those types of, you know, giving the builder leeway in exchange for the community getting something.
Interesting.
Any ideas on that?
And the difficult dance that you have to play there is that you want to get more from the builders without chasing them into the comprehensive permit as the easy out. Because right now, the town could make really, really stringent rules on creating affordable housing. We could say you need to make 50% of your units affordable. Nobody's ever going to do that because they can avoid our requirements by doing a comprehensive permit and they only have to do 25%.
And then at that point, as Joe says, we're not approving it, we're disproving it, basically, right? When they go comprehensive plan route?
It's difficult to disprove it. You have to have certain findings to disapprove it.
It'd have to be something major. It'd have to be a huge environmental impact issue, a watershed issue.
A safety issue.
Public safety, public health.
Yeah. But even still, they could rectify that with really good and expensive engineering. I mean, there's ways that it's not an automatic shut-off.
Right, and that's just it. I mean, they can propose something at, say, master plan, and you could go, I don't think you're going to be able to make that work. And then at preliminary, when they come in with all their engineering details, they could say, okay, we brought in a bunch of people. These guys are the expert engineers. They say they can build a septic system that's going to do this. DEM says they'll approve it. And then the planning board is, you know, really without a lever to do anything.
Did you say it was the Curtis Corner one? Was that a comprehensive plan?
Yes.
So you didn't really get a say in that one. That kind of that
might be a little
negative.
Strong.
Okay.
But it's difficult to disapprove them. More difficult to disapprove them.
How many comprehensive plans have we done as a town?
Comprehensive permits.
Oh, permits. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, something about the plan, but yeah, I was talking about that earlier. The permits.
How many have we done?
Yeah.
There are quite a few out there.
Okay.
I have a spreadsheet. I'll be glad to send it to you. I've sent it to George.
A few years ago, you didn't see any, and now I want to say it's like one out of three subdivisions, maybe. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Okay. And they're just sort of doing that to skirt around having to.
I think a lot of it is increased densities.
Yeah, they can increase density with it. That's the big lever. But I'll send you the spreadsheet that I have. It lists all of the developments that we have with affordable units in them, and it breaks them out between inclusionary zoning and there's a whole bunch of data.
Is there any green space requirement that goes with the increased density?
So if you look at the state regulations for the
comprehensive permit, they can pretty much propose any zoning relief. So they could, or zoning variances, and it just goes to the planning board, it doesn't go to the zoning. So in a subdivision where there may be a certain amount of open space, they can propose a project without that.
Okay, yeah, so just curious about that.
So all the all our subdivision regulations are still applicable, but they can propose variances to any of them.
So are these gonna be rental units or homeownership units? Because I'm wondering if we're basing the approvals based on the renting or the
Affordable units can be either. We typically ask them to identify as part of their plan whether or not they are going to be rental units or ownership units, mainly because the percentage of area median income changes, because all rental units have to go to be based on 80% area median income, while ownership units can change 80% to 120%. And sometimes when we get a subdivision, you'll get, you know, two lots at 80% and two lots at 100% and two lots at 120%.
So there's another thing. So the statewide comprehensive permit, you can go anywhere from 30 to 99 years. So of course the developer's going to propose 30 years of the restriction on 99. Our town requires the 99, I think, or 100. And then also on the statewide, you can go anywhere from 80 to 120% if you're selling it with a median income. So of course the developers mostly want to go to 120. Where our town requires, what, 80 to 100 or 80? It's a lower percentage.
Yeah.
So that all kind of pushes the developer to the comprehensive permit, and then we lose, you know, we have less control.
Mm-hmm. So I think the things that you can help with are things like Joe is talking about, how to find things that might be attractive to developers, but also in identifying areas of town where you think these things are workable. You know, a lot of increased density fits well in the R10 and R20. We don't have a lot of open lots left in R10 or R20, which means you're talking about redevelopment of existing properties somehow. Either tear down or adding more units to a lot that already has a house on. How to go about identifying overlay districts or something. Would be helpful.
There's like documents you could send to us where we could compare the two side by side, sort of thing, clean through facts and
compare
the comprehensive plan versus the comprehensive permit,
which is essentially one of two pages that probably that's applicable what the required findings are.
Yeah, basically it's. I can send them to you. In fact, I just sent them to somebody else, so I'll just copy you on the emails. In fact, I did both the state statute and the local ordinance.
You're talking about the one that's proposed out there, that it be a nonprofit. Would you know what they are using as their financing sources? Because that'll tell you what income levels they'll be hitting. Rural development, low-income housing tax credits, all those come with a requirement for maximum rents and things like that.
Yeah, like I said, this hasn't formally come in yet. We're seeing some preliminary design sketches. You know, we have this kind of back and forth between planning staff and developers to try and help them come up with an appealing project before it formally comes in the door, either as a pre-application or as a master plan.
Okay.
application.
Do you know what? Oh, it's in West Kingston.
Yeah.
The one thing that I took away from that planning board meeting with Horsley Witten, the one thing I wrote down was that we've talked about this a lot, but the power of the design concept and the, is it the mansion house, is that what they call it? The houses that are like a four unit, but it looks like a single family. I feel like that could be a helpful bridge for, and maybe that's something to look into. I don't know if it's something you can incent, if it's something that, you know, if that's something we could look at as well to promote, maybe with, we had talked about, I think there was some work being done on having like off-the-shelf plans in some cases for some types of buildings, but to get people interested in multifamilies, that type of house I think would be more palatable just based on the comments that were coming from everybody, you know, in there about change, you know. High density, a bunch of small houses in a neighborhood where there's all houses, you know, single homes, but a mansion house or two, each has a four unit, you know, maybe a one piece of property, even that might be a way to build some density in as well. And that was just one of the takeaways. Because it did seem, you know, there's quite a bit of pushback on change, there's quite a bit of pushback on just design elements, I think, of some of those things. And I can see it, you know, but like I said, envisioning the Columbia Street thing, it would be interesting to see what that looked like on a 1 acre lot with eight little buildings. I think it had a main house in the front. I think that was one of those ones.
There was an existing house in the front that was going to stay.
Yeah. It had a bunch of small ones. It reminds me of the Big Lebowski, right? Because he lived in that little, you've seen that one. But that might be something to explore as well. That was just one of the notes that I took at the
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting concept. So kind of like a pre-approved design. They could change the architecture a little bit for a house that would fit into maybe a more of a rural setting, but would have four units. Maybe something where, you know, the parking was screened from the street, so you really didn't even see that there was, you know, eight cars there. And it just looks like a nice house as you drive around this road.
Right, like a farmhouse or a Victorian or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think something like that, if this group wanted to, you know, propose and develop that, something like that, then I think there's definitely opportunities for that.
This is a...
She's like, let me show you one.
Well, no, so this in East Greenwich, they did these things called the cottages on green, and they're very cute.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
So it's, you know, it's like, I think they have 12 units, same type of... And they're cute. They also have another one, some of them are selling for 1.2, and they've sold, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And then they also have affordable ones, too, but...
I'll pass it around.
So they're not... I think that, to your point, you can make them architecturally attractive.
And I think that it's not the architecture part. I think architecturally, that's something people are getting their heads around. But I do think there's something to how it fits in.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like that squeezed into, you know, you got single family, you got this little almost like a mini neighborhood on a 1 acre lot, and you've got single family. Even the development, the Magnolia Court development, right, the one behind.
Yep. It's on Oak. Right?
Yeah, is it off
near that Verizon?
Is it off Cleveland or is it off Oak? I think it's off
Cleveland.
Oak.
Okay.
And that, I've got a few friends that live in that neighborhood, and it's funny because when it was being built, of course, I was excited about it, and they were not. And it was just because those are larger houses, and they're very close to each other, and they're all kind of crammed into that little, you know, that area. So it's interesting to get the feedback from the folks who are living around it, you know, and seeing what it looks like and seeing what it disrupts, you know, view-wise and all that sort of stuff. Because change is difficult, as Brian said at the beginning of this. So.
Yeah, I live in South Shore Village, and it's very similar to that, you know, where the houses are fairly close together. So there's only, now I think they're down to four different models, but all in on the street. Now, the concept there is, though, that there's a lot of green space, there'll be a golf course in there, and, you know, that type of thing. But the houses are compressed into a smaller area, which actually also helps with other things like it lowers the cost for the builders for infrastructure, roads, things like that, because you're not spreading it out for 97 miles. So there are examples around, I guess, you know, for that. But I understand the, you know, certainly the scale of the buildings having to fit in with whatever neighborhood they're going into.
It's good to see that. It's good to see that, though. Is that a realtor.com link or something?
No, I can send you. I can put some links on some interesting neighborhoods that are kind of like this.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
This isn't the cutest one, but there's a bunch of them.
Send those, if you don't mind, send those to Brian, and Brian will bounce them out to us.
Okay.
And that's a good thing to visualize while we're reading through the information, you know, thinking about, you know, where that might fit in. Do you want to try and tackle those two things for the next meeting then, for, you know, Ryan will send out that information so we can look at it and see if we can come up with win-wins, right, as Joe puts it, and also think about how the mansion house concept, how we can incentivize that for builders as well. Start with those two pieces. Does that sound reasonable?
We don't see many townhouse. I don't know, I'm not like trying to change the subject, but I know there's like beautiful townhouses. I'm from California, so there's a lot of those kind of developments. It's like a kind of like duplex in those too, but townhouses like three or four. We haven't really seen many of those.
No, and that's this missing middle that we're currently trying to find a place for in town. You know, it's duplex kind of, but it's really above, it's really sets of duplexes or triplexes or quads, like up to 8 units. And you could have a nice row of townhouses with 8 units or 2 sets of 4 townhouses, depending on where you are and what you need to do to make the scale of the development sort of fit in. It could simply be a project for people to, you know, use aerial imagery or drive around town or think about your personal knowledge of town in where these small multi-unit type developments would work.
I was thinking about that idea of, you know, you had acceptable types of developments for different areas, you know, would make somehow speed up the process if you were to go with this scale of a building in this neighborhood. You know, make it a lot easier to go through the approval process than, you know, something that's going to be outside the.
Well, I think as part of this, we would look at having some sort of design guidelines similar to what we created for the cottages, because there's a set of design guidelines that goes along with that ordinance. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing would be true with the missing middle idea. You know, that you couldn't just plop down a cinder block fourplex and call it a day. That it would have to meet some sort of criteria for fitting in, you know, aesthetic, neighborhood aesthetic, street presence, that kind of thing.
And I think the struggle, to your point, is that there's just not any land. You know, the areas where that would fit in are Peacedale, Wakefield. Yeah, in the town areas, and there's not a lot of land to be had.
Not without having real density increases, or without talking about tear down and redevelopment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
there are houses that have acreage in the back or something like that.
We do. We have, in some areas of town, we have a lot of very deep lots that only have frontage to support one dwelling unit, but you might be able to put a series of cottages behind. They're not readily visible from the streetscape. If you can do it well, you can screen it from the abutting neighbors and still wind up with more density there than you had.
But you have to, there's, so I've identified a bunch of different places in Wakefield but they're all privately owned. You know, I don't know if you can try to incentivize people who own them to sell.
You know, if you've gone to that level, I think that's an interesting thing to look at, maybe to present to the planning board and say, okay, how do we identify these kinds of properties on a larger scale basis around town? What characteristics do these lots have? Yeah. And maybe we can take those characteristics and put them into an ordinance to say, okay, these properties qualify for these sorts of density increases.
There was a lot of those types of discussions when we were talking about the cottage zoning, and talking about R10 and R20. But then, you know, people were concerned about specific R20 zoning, that what it did in there. Talked about making sure it had sewer and water. I think there was concern of, you know, you can't really spot zone something either. You can't really say, okay, we're going to let this lot be and that lot not be. Right. So you end up doing the best job you can and see how it works. And you got to back up and change the regulations, you do. But, yeah. You know, you have the discussion and you kind of think about the what ifs and then you make a decision.
No, but if Megan has identified a series of lots,
yeah,
that might be viable for that kind of development, could you look at them and say, okay, all these lots have X number of area, X number of road frontage, a width to depth ratio of something, and then you could zone for that set of characteristics. Yeah.
And I think, like I said, maybe on a lesser scale, we'll try to do that a little bit when we're talking about the cottage zoning. We're probably going a little deeper than when we did that. We talked about what characteristics would be good for cottage zoning.
All right, we got 20 minutes left, so I'm going to keep it moving. So that'll be certainly for our agenda for next meeting. In the meantime, Brian will send out that information to us. And I think it's all about density, right? It's about density. It's about trying to figure out any way we can create a win-win between the builder and us and have them not build the comprehensive permit. Condos, excellent. Mansion houses, cottage houses, anything.
Habitat for many years, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. We used to have somebody from Habitat on this.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take a look at that stuff for the next meeting. And then, Megan, did you want to dig in even deeper on the properties you've already identified, or you've already got that information pretty much?
Yeah, so I can, you don't mean to send you?
Yeah, send those.
I'll send you the ones that I think could be turned into something. You can tell me.
All right, old business. So we're back to the educational outreach, which is, I think we're resetting this again, because at one point we had assigned some subject stuff to everybody and we've lost a couple of members. I still think, it was funny when we went and did our new swearing-ins, or our new interview, as it was.
Yes.
The new interview.
Yes.
Talked a little bit about education, and a lot of them looked up and shook their heads like, yes, you know, it's needed in some format. I still think this is important. And there's probably a lot of ways we can take it, but again, I'm kind of looking at low-hanging fruit. I'm thinking we should get back to just looking at what are the top four things, because I'm also assuming whatever we come up with, before it can even be published on the town website, the council has to look at it and approve it, I'm assuming. Is that right, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain people in town hall that have the authority over that. I don't know that it necessarily needs to go to the council. It does have to go through
somebody
the manager.
Somebody has to approve it. Yeah, and even the concept, it would be something new. We'd say, okay, here's four pieces that we'd like to publish once a month for the next 4 months, and it's some bips on affordable housing. And I think keeping these as basic and simple, I think you have to think Facebook posts, you have to think short attention span,
to the point, and maybe it has some links that pop out to some other things in the town. Maybe it pops out to the town comprehensive plan that's online for people to read and reference certain pages. But I'm envisioning something that's almost like a, you know, do you know that the town of South Thinkstown has an affordable housing committee? By the way, would you like to join? You know, we meet monthly and discuss how, you know, affordable housing, it's a big issue. We understand we're trying to help, you know, people may not know that we even have that, what we even do, you know.
I had some inquiries. I put some things out there on Facebook and the South Kingston page, and I'm like, what is that? How do we, and I was like, they thought they can go to the town hall page, you know, to look it up. And I was like, yeah, well, we can inquire through the town, because we have, don't we have a link that kind of talks about what we do, like our goals and, you know, the mission.
Yeah, and anybody who's curious, you can have them call me. I'd be more than glad to direct them to the website, to the committee application materials. If they don't have a means of accessing it electronically, I'll stick it in the mail and send it to them. You know, whatever needs to be done. I mean, that's part of the role I'm supposed to be playing here, because I am available, you know, all week long, and you guys are not, so.
Okay. The next one, I think, is a lot of this comes from just talking to people, right? You know, do you know that the town regulation for new building projects has requirements for affordable housing? You know, a certain percentage and a certain income level, and also that the properties have to have the same look and feel as the other properties. They can't be different. I think just a little bit of explanation there. And these can bounce out to more robust explanations if they exist somewhere in the CIP. I'm assuming a lot of them do. But just to describe what we have going on now. And maybe we even state that we have...
What is the basic knowledge of the community on what affordable housing is?
I think it's pretty limited.
And so I think that would be the first thing is to...
What is affordable housing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm looking, I did some numbering, you know, Brian sent me some stuff, and I broke out the affordable housing units as best I could by AMI, and whether they're home ownership or rental. And yeah, there are units, if you stay above the 120, because the classical affordable housing starts at 80% of AMI. We have, you know, some units, but compared to the population, obviously, it's pretty low. But then I'm looking at what is. So I went to the 2020 census as best I could, and it looks like the area median income here is $96,000 a year. But that means that half the population is under that. And if you start looking at even at 120, almost nobody could afford a house here.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you seen the housing?
But I don't think people. Yeah, I did. I did read that. But it does. Yeah, and I use some of that for the ideas. But I think if we can get some of that type of information and maybe equate it to what jobs are at these levels, you know, so who you're talking about. Who need affordable housing. I think you can get, and you know, maybe some things on, you know, where, how far are you willing to go to find your grandchildren, because they can't, your children can't afford to live in the same town they grew up in. You know, that I think can start bringing it home to what affordable housing is and what it is. You know, why it's important. It's not just those people that need housing.
Yeah, and some of that information is public record, so you can get an entry level teacher salary, police officer,
all that stuff.
EMS,
yeah.
You know, our fire departments are volunteer, but our EMS service is paid for. You can get public figures on people serving in the military.
On retail, because this area is heavily retail oriented. So what's that doing? Well, you can see what it's doing to things that are not available. Like, you know, Oceanside, I can't get my fried fish on Friday night because they don't have enough staff to be able to do that. You know, where they used to do that all the time. You know, those types of things that targets, you know, the retail business people here should be talking about that.
Well, if the members want to work on putting together postings that would work in a Facebook type setting, you know, think of your audience. You've got a very limited amount of time to make your point in a Facebook post. Otherwise, people just are on to the next thing.
It's got to be pretty basic, and then can link out to things if people are interested enough after they read the basic part.
You know, do you realize that you would have to earn this much money to afford a two-bedroom apartment here?
$27 an hour. I saw that.
Yeah, those types of things, though, that catches people's
attention. $27 an hour for a single person to afford a one or two-bedroom here in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how many one and two-bedroom apartments exist in this town? Practically none.
How many, three,
yeah,
or four?
And when you're dealing with a retail, you know, retail workers, they are not going to be able to commute long distances.
But they either have to walk to work now because of the gas prices, or
public transportation, therefore.
And even that's less of an existence here in South Peak, so ridiculous.
Yeah. Should we each take something and try and write something up for the next time around? We tried that before. I started something.
So for like a do you know?
Yeah.
So each one of us has
think of it like that. And
come back with one or two do you knows.
And think of the, we can work on them together once we just need to get something down,
yeah,
right? But think of your
some stuff to just kick around.
Think of your I like to think of my aunt when I'm thinking about these things. Like, right, my aunt's gonna read this. What's gonna get through to my aunt? You know, like that. I usually try and do something simple like that.
I wish I knew how to create flyers. I don't know, because I think that catches their attention and how did you know?
Well,
a little tidbit, and then have like in the caption maybe two sentences and a link.
Yeah, if you can get me the text, I can work on the presentation, you know, the Facebook type presentation aspect of it.
Because Capital Good Fund, if you go through them, you can, all you need is a credit advisor and dedicate at least 6 meetings with a credit advisor. You know, financial advisor, I mean, and within 6 months you have a credit score, and after a year you have an even better credit score.
Right. So this is a whole nother aspect of, you know, how do you put yourself in good financial standing?
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's something. Write about something that you think is important. Right. We'll start with that, because we just need to get like 4 workable ones that we're working on that have something to do with what we're doing. Right. So give that a shot.
So okay.
We'll keep that on the agenda for next week, but that'll be for next month. But it'll be it's an action item this time.
Yes.
We're doing pretty good. 10 of 8. Public forum discussion.
I was just going to ask about the.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll jump right to that.
We'll jump right to and this was. Well, first of all, the thing I originally had on this, Christian already talked about, is member recruitment. We're at 4. If any of you guys get a cold going into the fall, we won't be meeting. So we do need members. So any people that you know who might be interested in that, just have them call me, and I will set them up with how to apply and get forward. So,
can we advertise that? I'm kind of deactivated right now, but
it is advertised. I will talk to the Facebook operators and see if I can give them some text to just blast out. It is constantly advertised on the town website,
and
the clerk told me they run a quarterly ad in the newspaper, which nobody reads anymore either. So let me work on I'll mock up some stuff and send them to the two people in town hall who do the Facebook, and just ask them to put them out, and maybe I'll put that on my calendar to do once a month.
Yeah. There's Our Town, there's South Kingston Townies, there's like a whole bunch of other, I do know some of the people that run these Facebook groups, but I think it's just out there.
Okay.
It seems like I'm the only one that puts stuff about South Kingston housing or wells.
Okay. So, moving on, and this came up last week, this is very new, it came in for a pre-application concept. This is the intersection on Route 1 across from the Government Center, where the Fairfield Hotel is. They're proposing to put a 70-unit apartment building behind the hotel. This, if you look at this drawing, so this in the middle is the existing hotel.
Yep.
This out front is not built, but the original approval for this is actually part of South County Commons. So, but the original approval for this area included the hotel in the middle and a building out front, which was mocked up as a restaurant, and another building in back where the apartment buildings are going that was mocked up as a restaurant. So they're proposing now, instead of doing a restaurant in back, to do this 70-unit, 1- and 2-bedroom, all-rental apartment building.
Looks like
three
floors.
This is four. Done by the This is the same developer who developed South County Commons.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but you guys know we close at 8, right?
We do. Yes.
Okay. Make sure. Thanks.
So I mean, this is really just sort of a heads up. Like I said, it's very preliminary. I was talking to Jay Parker, one of the other planners, and we're going to try and come up with some sort of development review process to run through you guys so that if the planning board wants a formal opinion from you, we'll have a process to put this through. So this comes in, say, for master plan, Joe and the planning board members could vote to say, hey, we want to hear what our Affordable Housing Commission has to say about this. It could come to you. You could say, 1, 2 bedrooms. What about 3 bedrooms? Maybe we need more 1 bedrooms and 2, you know, wherever your heads are at.
Public transportation, RIPTA, be able to have access to this?
That's, you know, that's a valid. You're right on Route 1. The buses are going up and down.
Yeah.
Right. Are there going to be restrictions on pricing of the rental units?
So this has come in as a comprehensive permit, mainly because at 4 stories, it will be well above the 35-foot height limit in town.
Yep.
And so they are proposed, 70 units means 18 of the units will have to be affordable. If they're rentals, they'll be affordable at 80% AMI.
Is there any way we can get them to do 50% AMI?
Well,
because 80% AMI does not really work for the lower.
Funny you should mention
people who need this.
Because when this came in the door, I was there are new provisions in the Affordable Housing Act that talk about multifamily development that allow that if the developer does more affordable units at lower AMIs, the town actually gets to take credit for the market rate units as well as the deed restricted. The problem is the way they wrote the law is that there is zero incentive for a developer to actually do this. So what it says, for example, a comprehensive permit is 25%, either 80% rental or 80 to 100% ownership. under this language, if they did 30% affordable at 60% AMI, the town could take credit for half a unit of the market rate units. So,
when you say take credit, you mean?
It would count towards our affordable housing goal of 10%, our 10% affordable housing goal, even if it's market rate. So the only one that benefits out of this is the town, because we get to count extra affordable, even though they're full market rate units. The idea being that this type of development will ultimately be more affordable than single family homes, I guess, is their idea.
I was just curious if Rhode Island Housing has any incentive financing for...
They do.
You know, for, you know, helping build these units, making more units affordable.
They do have, they have something right now that's a site acquisition plan. So, but I don't know if a developer will really find that $1 million.
Well, I didn't know if they could, yeah. Well,
and the site acquisition isn't going to help here with a developer already on it.
Right.
Unless they support another corporation and buy them.
So,
believe me, that can be done.
Yeah, right? Well, that's... I thought about that myself. Yeah. Yeah. So is there any way that we can, as a town, make a rule that moving forward, when people build, they have to start doing some 50% AMI stuff?
I think this goes back to our earlier conversation. We want to build the incentives in the inclusion area to make it beneficial to the builder as well as to the town.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can just say you have to do this because it's just going to push them to the comprehensive plan where they don't have to do it.
Right.
But
so what's the trade-off?
What
are you willing to give up to get that?
So maybe it's less than 20%. You know, you can only have if it's, I'm just throwing it out.
Instead
of doing 20% of the in your inclusionary zoning, you only have to do 10%. Yeah. But you have to do them at 50% instead of, you know, 100% or 80%.
And if we have a nonprofit developer, then you
so yeah, the
well, yeah, right? Just saying. Yeah.
So the developer may find that if I don't have to, you know, if I don't have to do two, I only have to do one, yeah, right. Okay, I'll just take the loss on that one and just sell it at 50% or whatever.
But,
interesting.
So those are the types of trade-offs I think you gotta look at.
But do we think these are going to be rentals or homeownership? We don't know.
The proposal right now says rentals.
Yeah.
But we've seen that change. Yeah. You know, mid-development plan, they get in, they start doing more detailed design work.
Yeah.
They decide it doesn't economically work
right.
on a rental.
Yeah.
So who knows? But right now, the proposal is 70 rental units.
I guess they said they want to do condos, right? The last time. Right. All condos.
And then if it's comprehensive plan, we don't have much of that.
They still would have to do 25%.
Yeah, but still, if they want to switch from condos to rentals.
We're not going to be able to dictate that.
You can't do anything.
No.
And who advantage?
Good discussions for next time. We hit our 8 o'clock. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second? George second. Okay. Well, adjourned. Thank you guys.
All right.